Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Raiders make the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Reiner to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up on the program, the A-State men's basketball schedule continuing to take shape. A couple of big-name opponents added to that schedule over the last few days. We'll talk about that, but don't want to waste any more time. Let's welcome in our very special guest today, Red Wolves legend, a member of the A-State Hall of Honor, now a team captain and all-pro linebacker for the New Orleans Saints, our good buddy DeMario Davis. How you doing, DeMario?
What's going on, gentlemen? What's going on? It's great to be back on with y'all.
I'll go way out on you rattling off those accomplishments. I'm going to go way out on limb and say, too, just a matter of probably once he decides he's played enough and the schedule opens up, we can probably go and slot him in as a Ring of Honor member coming up sooner than later, too, inside the stadium.
Hey, man, that would be a tremendous honor, man. Thanks for thinking of me in that regard.
And I think that is very appropriate one day. But what would be a bigger deal, DeMario, going into the Ring of Honor or having your own A-State bobblehead? What was that like, seeing that you had a bobblehead?
Hey, man, that was surreal. My kids loved it, by the way.
Oh, I bet.
But that was surreal to have my own bobblehead. And, man, that thing was well done. You know, a lot of these things, they look real goofy. I mean, don't look anything like the person, but that was very well done. And that was a tremendous honor in and of itself. So that was a very big deal.
It won't surprise anybody to know that DeMario could not have been more accommodating or easier to work with in that process. But then, since we're talking bobbleheads, I got a picture one day from your teammate, Blake Groupie, who had his DeMario Davis bobblehead in his locker in the Saints locker room. What was that like?
Yeah, to this day, he still got it there. I think it's pretty cool, man, to have another Red Wolf in the room, man, and he representing. And it's pretty funny seeing that thing sit over there in his locker.
Well, Blake tells the story that when he first got to the Saints, that you couldn't have been more welcoming, because I'm sure he's nervous coming in, obviously being the smallest guy in the room, the newest guy on the team. And he said that you sat right next to him and would say, "Hey, Red Wolf."
Yeah, man, you got to take care of your school brothers, man. And so I had to look out for him. I mean, I can only imagine. I know what it was like for me as a rookie, but even more as a specialist, the amount of pressure that's on you to secure the job or get the job. And then when you get it, how much is on you. And they asked him to make some major kicks and some big moments for us. And so I just try to look out for him, man, and make sure, you know, he feels comfortable, he feels welcome, and he feels upbeat and he feels encouraged, and he knows he's got people behind him.
And it had to help his street cred to get, you know, one of the leaders of the team, unquestioned leaders of the team, to kind of do that. But, you know, you said you know what it's like to be the young guy in the locker room. You don't know what it's like to be the young guy in the locker room and look 14. You haven't had that challenge.
No, I didn't have that, man. I mean, like you said, he's the smallest guy in the room, one of the youngest guys in the room. That's the uphill battle in itself. And so it's a constant fight to prove yourself. But I feel like he's done more than excelled. He had a phenomenal first year. Made some really big kicks, and I think you see the amount of time and attention and to detail he puts into his craft. I think he'll continue to do well.
Well, DeMario, here you are getting ready to go into your 13th season in the NFL. First off, congratulations on that. It still seems like yesterday you were here, though, here from 2008 to 2011. So when you look back on your 4 years at A-State, how much did that time shape you not only as a player but as a person as well?
Oh, man, my time at Arkansas State shaped me so much. The trajectory of my life changed when I was at Arkansas State. I mean, I came in and I was coming from a rough environment in Mississippi, and getting out of Mississippi saved my life, but I still had a lot of my ways. I mean, I went to jail my first year in college. I thought Coach Rob was going to kick me off the team, but he gave me another shot. I ended up giving my life to Christ on campus. That was a radical paradigm shift and perspective shift in my life, and just learning how to live for something that was greater than myself, man, I played with some awesome teammates that are still my brothers to this day. And so getting through those adverse times of the team not doing well and things not going well, you know, off the field, you know, just having some brothers that, you know, it never felt like a bad moment. You know, so many people around just to be able to laugh. A lot of the character stuff and just the environment set that Coach Roberts had put in place with the culture. And then, you know, playing with Coach Freeze and how he came in and transformed the culture. Our senior year to winning the conference crown. He used to say, the bigger the stage, the bigger we play. And it just embracing that mindset of, you know, every moment, you know, you kind of ready for it. And so, man, it was just so many things that shaped me in my time there. I met my wife there. Now we've been married, just celebrated 12 years, got the fruit of that marriage is 6 amazing kids, you know. So much happened in that time, that 4 or 5 year window, that really is the foundation of who I am and what I stand for today.
Nothing you said is obviously bigger than you talking about decision to give your life to Christ. But how much of that is the transformation you underwent here? And you've made the comment, getting out of Mississippi changed your life. How much of the challenge was finding that kind of sweet spot, that fine line between playing with a chip on your shoulder, but not living with a chip on your shoulder?
Yeah, that was a battle that continued on long after I left A-State is to find the balance. Yeah, when you step on the field, you know, so much of that is about, you know, confidence and having an edge and having that chip. What life is, it's not about you. It's about the people around you and, you know, what type of impact you can leave on them. And the game is really meant to be played that way. I think not everybody treats the game that way, but I feel like football is the greatest teacher of life. And I just learned to play the game in a selfish way, which had its, you know, its perks, but also had its downfalls. And I think that trickled over into my life. But I think as I continue to grow and continue to do the internal work mentally, spiritually, I just started to learn that, you know, a lot of times you can have a false edge about yourself, you know, a false chip on your shoulder, which is really just built around insecurities. But the more that I identified who I am and identify who God has called me to be, you know, I just became more confident and boldly able to walk as myself and be unapologetically me. And, you know, when I'm on the field, I'm going to play with a ton of energy and excitement and passion and violence. But at the end of the day, man, I'm trying to love people. I'm trying to help people see Jesus. I'm trying to encourage people. I'm trying to pick people up. I'm trying to leave a lasting impact, you know, with the intangible more than the tangible on people's lives. And so it is a balance. You have to find it. But I think a lot of it is just based on identity.
We mentioned earlier that you're now a member of the A-State Hall of Honor. You were inducted back in 2021, and that's a night I'll never forget, and such a great night because not only did you get inducted, but you went in the same night as Ryan Applin. And I thought that was really fitting because here you guys are, two cornerstones of this program and what it's become, but neither one of you guys were just highly recruited, but Steve Roberts gave you an opportunity. And you mentioned Coach Roberts earlier and how he kind of gave you a second chance. But I thought it was fitting that you and App both went in at the same time.
Yeah, man, that was a great era when we came through and what we were able to do at the program. But I think you hit the nail on the head. So much of that was about recruiting. It was about going out and finding guys that could really play that weren't being highly recruited elsewhere. And I think that's what builds great teams. When you look at the landscape of college football today, it's much different than when we came in. But at the end of the day, it's still going to come down to recruiting. And I think so much of it has gone, you know, towards NIL and money. But I think it's about going out and finding those guys who have long-term goals and winning mentalities inside of them. And they want to deal with adversity and want to face it. And they're not just trying to go to a school where they can get a check. They're not looking at the short term. They're looking at the long term and finding those hungry guys. And that's what I feel like Coach Roberts did. Coach Freeze was able, even though he's a phenomenal recruiter as well, but he was able to come in and capitalize on Coach Roberts' staff's talent. And that's what they did. They went out and got a bunch of guys who weren't highly recruited, but were really good players that they knew they saw something in that would develop well. And that's what happened, man. Me and Applin were just guys who just maximized our development. But we had a ton of other teammates who did the same thing. We just so happened to be kind of the guys who were seen as the face of the offense and the face of the defense. But it was so many other players that were there. I know when I mean, on defense with me, it was Kelsey McCray, it was Brandon Joyner, it was Dorvis Woods. We had studs all over. And then even after me, at the linebacker position, you had guys like Q Lee. I mean, we were loaded on defense. And then offense, you had guys like Dwayne Frampton, Taylor Stockamer, Anthony Kinsey. I mean, you had so many guys who played vital roles in what we were doing. And, you know, App was just the guy that was distributing it. And I think to win, you have to be able to go and recruit those good players. And I think it's a very challenging landscape to recruit today. But I think it's an even more challenging landscape to identify who are those real players that are going to turn into dogs that are not. They may not be heavily recruited, but they got the right stuff.
Coach Freeze had taken the Ole Miss job, and I remember standing on the field with him in Mobile at that GoDaddy Bowl, and he said, look, he told me, he said, we had everything in place. We had talent. Everybody took care of the business academically. We had good character kids. The only thing we had to change this year was just the belief we could win. Now, I've told people before, Coach Freeze, in terms of getting people to follow him, I think if he had he gone into business, he'd probably be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. What is it about that guy? Kind of, what was the secret sauce that made him kind of give him more than you thought you had to give?
I think he just did a phenomenal job of coaching the heart. He's one of those guys that can really connect with you on a heart level. And, you know, he makes you feel like he cares. I think in any arena, it's the relationship first. People don't care how much you know till they know how much you care. He was the ultimate competitor, and he was the ultimate connector. So when he spoke, he connected. And he could walk in any room, get anybody charged up, get anybody fired up. But he's a competitor, too. When he steps on that field, he wants to win. And I feel like anybody in this space, they want to win. So winners are going to connect with winners. And I feel like the fact that he coached the heart is what, you know, made people ready to run through a wall. And plus, he was changing guys' lives, man. So people were getting connected with God in a real way. I think people were searching and wanting to know and wanting to walk deeper. And so for me, as a believer at the time, it was easy to just to mesh with him and kind of push the messaging, because that's what I wanted. I want those guys, our teammates, to know more about God and care about their relationship with God. And I think he impacted so many guys. And, you know, everywhere he goes, it's no shock that he has that success. When he was at Ole Miss, I think he had a couple of years that he was the number one recruiter. He turned Auburn around like they had Alabama down at the wire last year. And so he went on a tear over at Liberty. And so he's going to have success everywhere he goes. And but I think that's just the winning formula in general. You got to be able to coach guys' hearts. You got to be able to connect with them. They got to want to play for you, especially in today's game, you know, when all these guys are just chasing checks, which I have, you know, no problem with, you know, people trying to get their money. But you got to have somebody that you know, you care about, that's going to make you want to stay when you have other people bidding for your attention. So you're going to have teammates that you don't want to leave, or you're going to have a coach that makes you feel like family that you're not going to want to leave. That I feel like that's part of the recruiting process.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Red Wolf fans, this is DeMario Davis, proud Red Wolf and linebacker for the New Orleans Saints. And I'm asking you to help out our current A-State student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our players by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at impactclub.com. Thank you, and Wolves up.
Continuing to visit with DeMario Davis here on the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. And look, you talk about those coaches that had an impact on you. And look, we are so proud of you and everything that you've turned into and the kind of man, both on and off the field, that you've become. But you want those coaches to challenge you along the way. And we remember the moment, and I know this had to be kind of a turning point for you as well, but the moment at Iowa in 2009 when you do the front flip in the end zone. And I remember Coach Corliss, Coach Peoples, and Coach Roberts all kind of waiting for you as you got back to the sideline. How did that kind of change things for you?
Oh, man, that was a very interesting moment. You know, I was very immature at that time. And so for me, it was just a big moment. You know, I had made a play on ESPN and I got lost in the excitement as I'm running down the sideline. It's all I'm thinking about is me in that moment. And I'm making a highlight on ESPN. I'm not factoring in the score. I'm not factoring in how this could be a game changing moment for my team. And so I flip in the end zone. And of course, the whole staff, man, they chew me out, you know, going down the sideline. And it's not connecting with me. It's like, you know, for me, it's like they're overreacting. And then, you know, I got disciplined once we got back, but it was a learning moment. You know, it's not about you. It's about the team. And now you forced us to take a penalty on the kickoff where we give them great field position and the defense is playing great. And now you just allowed them to get in field goal position, which allows them to extend the lead. And so where, you know, it could have been a game changing play. We get on defense, pin them back deep and get the ball back and score, take the lead and change the game. So it's just one of those situations, man, where you learn, but that's why you play the game and that's why you have coaches. It was a learning lesson for me in that moment.
Look, and I bring that up because we see how you've turned into the leader that you are now. And we saw that after that 09 season especially. I mean, you were undoubtedly the leader of that defense. And I think everybody sees it now with you and what you're doing with the Saints. But is that kind of part of the leadership process, becoming a leader, going through experiences like what you did?
Yeah, I mean, and a leader, man, for me is really just you got the biggest weight to serve the group. It's your responsibility to make sure that everybody's transitioning well, that everybody's on the same page. And so to do that, you got to make sure you understand all the different needs of people. You understand all the different hearts of people. And so literally it's just serving them. And I think to serve people well, you're a combination of all the different things that you've gone through in life. And so, yeah, every situation, you're winning and building confidence or you're learning. You know, you never lose it. It's a mindset. Kind of what Freeze was talking about. It's a mindset. And I think that's all you're constantly doing is growing. And then you take all those different lessons that you've gone through, whether you watch people do it or you've experienced them yourself, and you turn that into some type of output of impact. And that's, I feel like, is wisdom. And so whether you're doing something for somebody or you're talking with somebody about something, you're really just sharing wisdom. And you don't get that wisdom without life.
So, you know, look, there's such a mutual kind of love and appreciation between this place and you. I mean, we talked about doing the bobblehead, and you watch the new university commercial and you're in it, but I mean, it goes both ways, the way you talk about this place. But a lot of that is, you know, about relationships, and you guys are your real life examples of kind of the relationships you can build in that stage of life, because some of these names that you rattled off that you played with are guys you're still in contact with all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's family, man. I mean, I'm talking with Applin all the time. I'm talking with Don Jones all the time. Brandon Joyner, we're all still connected. You know, all those guys that we play with.
You got a big group text, right?
Yeah, we got a huge group text with all the guys in it. Jaquan Kilcrease lives right down the street, so we hang out all the time. He'll probably come over to the house today. Kelsey McCray, Jeremy Gibson, they got a chance to come to a game this past year. So we stay connected, man. I mean, it was a bond. It was a bond that was not in a brotherhood, that was just not football. It was life. And we're still doing life together.
Well, and you're still connected to the university as well, as Brad was talking about, the things you're doing right now and being involved with the Impact Club. And I know that you and Coach Jones have been in communication, and you're trying to do everything you can to help the program continue to succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, me and the guys, we're always talking about the organization. I mean, we work so hard to build a culture of winning, and that's all we want to see, is the organization kind of get back to that. And we understand that it's challenges, right? It's challenges in recruiting. It's challenging in staffing it right and making sure that the guys play up to the highest level and just competing, you know, just winning in general is hard, but that's what we care about. It's a family and it's a brotherhood, but we also established that winning culture. And, you know, kind of when you create that, you just get used to that standard. And so I think we all a little disappointed that we haven't got back to the level that we've all grown accustomed to. But, you know, it's in the work. We believe in the players. We believe in the coaches. You know, we were there at one time. I mean, I think that's – it was some guys that came behind us that they didn't get to see both sides, right? So they didn't know losing or being middle of the road. And we got to experience being middle of the road and losing to turning into a winning culture. So we know both sides and we know how much work goes into it. So I think that's what we just try to do is just be voices of support, encouragement, because we know how much work it's going to take. And it's just there's no other way. It's just going to be in the grit. It's going to be in the way they work out, the way they practice, the way the coaches go out on the road and recruit and find those right guys and just keep pushing. And the breakthrough is going to come. And it's going to be great. And I think the whole community smiles a little bit better when we're operating at that standard that we've grown accustomed to.
So, listen, last thing for me here is talk about you going into year 13 and you talk about the family, and you could probably start seeing you put the things in place for life after football. But do you start thinking in terms of how long that is? Do you know how long you want to go?
Yeah, man, I think about that all the time. I think it's going to be probably about 3 more years, man. I mean, if God say before then it'll be before then. But, you know, just been kind of praying about it. My wife and I talk about it. We feel like it's going to be about another 3 years. And then this phase of life will be coming to an end and we'll be transitioning out. But, you know, just taking it one at a time, one day at a time. We're on God's time, not our own time. And we're certainly prepping for when that transition takes place. My heart is really in player development. So helping like college age kids, guys, kind of transition into the next stage of life, you know, those young pros kind of get in and, you know, kind of get their career established. That's really what my heart and my passion is. But right now, my life is, you know, football. So I'm training around the clock and family. Got 6 kids. And so that's where all my time goes. But yeah, you definitely got to think about it.
Well, DeMario, we couldn't be more proud of you, man. And great to see you, by the way. Appreciate
you. Great to see you guys too, man.
Hanging out with us today, man. This has been fun.
I appreciate it, man. Anytime. Always a joy.
That's DeMario Davis joining us here on the Second to None podcast. We'll be back to wrap things up right after this.
At First National Bank, our mortgage lending team knows what it takes to make a home and a superior home loan process. Simple, proven, and reliable service with competitive rates at a bank that already feels like home. Since 1889, that's been the First National Bank way, because for our people, this is home. Apply online at fnbank.net/mortgage. From our family to yours. Welcome home. First National Bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T. Club.com. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helping our programs right now. Wolves up.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast presented by First National Bank and by Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. The A-State men's basketball schedule beginning to really take shape.
Yep.
As far as the non-conference goes. I know a couple of marquee games were added here in the past week, Alabama and Memphis. Now, Alabama, we played last year. Mm-hmm. We were in Tuscaloosa. They ended up going on to the Final Four. It's good to see Memphis back on the schedule. Red Wolves will go to the FedEx Forum December 8th to take on Penny Hardaway's team. And I think I saw somewhere just the third time in 14 years that
right.
we played them in men's hoops.
Yeah, there's not a lot of history there recently. Now, you know, you go back to sort of that mid to late 80s opening of the Convo, and there's, yeah. you know, there's some pretty famous games, even some postseason NIT games against one another. I think it may have been, I think they were the first game in the Convo for us in men's basketball,
yeah.
and us beating them might have been their last game in Mid-South Coliseum, which, I mean, nobody cares what Memphis Tigers did in the Mid-South Coliseum because that's the house Jerry Lawler built. Anyway, they were just something to do on nights other than Monday.
I actually made reference quite a few times when we were in the CBI this year to the last postseason win for the then Indians,
yep.
which was the 1991 NIT,
and
second round.
And I kind of think that's that game. I think it might have been their last game at okay. the Coliseum. So they said we opened the convo and closed the Coliseum together, and good to get together. And it's not our first matchup with them in FedEx Forum, but good to get back over there. And that game will not be boring with the style those two teams are going to want to play.
No, not with the style, and certainly not with the kind of talent these two teams are going to have this year.
We know how Memphis, that city of Memphis, loves basketball. I think the same is true in the state of Arkansas, honestly. So that'll be an exciting night for both fan bases. And I have no doubt FedEx Forum will be near capacity.
A lot more folks than the last time we went there in 2020, which we weren't doing the podcast back then, but that was an unforgettable experience for me because I had some different broadcast setups during that COVID time. But that was as unique as anything because they actually put me like in one of the suites, like suites, like you'd give to a big sponsor. And it was kind of up in one of the corners of the FedEx Forum. So I had an entire suite to myself. Sounds good on the surface, but man, I was high up. It was kind of tough to call a game from that high.
Lots of stories to be told, and yeah, I think you'll have a better setup here. And kind of, I was looking on Twitter the other day when this game came out, or A-State Nation sort of put all what they knew about the non-conference schedule in one place. We know the season opener is November 4th with Akron coming here. It should be a really good game.
24-win team from last year.
You know, then going to Alabama later that week, November 12th, their report is the date Little Rock's coming into Jonesboro.
Mm-hmm.
And then turn somewhere near – maybe we could be getting close to maybe all we don't know about this non-conference schedule perhaps is, you know, when and where they're playing in a – multi-team event. I think it's done, but I think the parts we know about it are close to complete. December 12th, UT Arlington's coming to Jonesboro for a game. They'll return the trip on the 15th to UAB, and then they know that the last non-conference game is set for February 8th in the Sunbelt MAC Challenge. And I don't know why even the league can call it what they want. And I don't think our league calls it the MAC Sunbelt Challenge, but that's the Sunbelt MAC Challenge.
Correct.
If you win it, you get top billing.
And we won it last year.
That's right.
All right. So, and I saw Jackson State.
Yeah. And
we need to get revenge on those guys.
There are reports that may be December 5th coming back to Jonesboro. I mean, so you start looking at those non-conference home games, potentially based on what we're seeing there. Akron, you just talked about 20-plus wins. Little Rock is Little Rock. You know, a team that we did not beat last year. Jackson State, a team we did not beat last year. UT Arlington, we know kind of where they were in the Sun Belt when they were in the league. So that's
one of the better teams in the league.
That's a really nice slate of non-conference home games. And I'm telling you, that is not easy to pull off. I'm not talking about winning them. I'm talking about scheduling them.
I remember one of the last Howl on Wheels events that we did, the last one that we did in Fayetteville a few weeks back, Ryan Hodson got up there and said, look, I had my assistants divvy up, and between me and the rest of my staff, we called every single Power 5 school trying to get games. And we only heard back from Alabama, which you know the relationship there with Nate Oates. Alabama and obviously Memphis is a big-time basketball school, but yeah, those were the only two that were really.
It's funny, they had five of those last year. How funny, it went from five to two.
It's amazing when you win 20 games and are expected to be a whole lot better this year, what happens.
Louisville, I don't think, picked up the phone. I don't think they saw the caller ID, 870, and said, screw that, we're not even.
How great was that visit with DeMario?
We were talking about how fast it went by during the break. I mean, what a cool kind of vantage point we've had to get to watch this thing unfold. And not the players, because we knew he was a great player, and certainly he's gone on. It's going to be really interesting when it's all said and done to really sit down with DeMario's and Bill Berge's career numbers and try to decide who's had the best NFL career for an A-State guy. But, I mean, he's tracking to probably have that title.
And DeMario now has over 1,300 career tackles and one of just three active players that can say that. Tells you the kind of longevity he's had and just the kind of performance he's had over what's now a 13-year NFL
maybe
career.
We broke a little news because it sounds like you know, he's kind of sound like maybe 15 he thinks is a nice round number.
Yeah, and he had signed a two-year contract extension this past offseason. Back in March, he signed that extension. So I'm guessing he wants to add one more year on top of that. I know they love him down in New Orleans. As long as
sure
he
do.
Keeps performing the way he is, I'm sure they'll have him around as long as he wants to be there.
You know, I've never had an NFL team. Never really been an NFL guy. So now, I mean, it's been pretty easy to kind of want the best for the Saints. I mean, they've got our guys, yeah.
And Groupie, yeah.
Yeah. And for a while, you know, last year, I mean, Kirk Merritt was down there too. So they opened the year with like a 54-man roster, or a 52-man roster, and they had three Red Wolves.
Yeah, that really hasn't happened a whole lot over the years, but hasn't happened for a lot of schools.
No,
something like that.
So, anyway, always great to talk with him, and doesn't just pay lip service to kind of this place. It's obvious what it means to him. And again, when we reached out last year, you know, the natural tie-in to wanting to do the bobblehead for him last year is not that you need a reason, but it was 2023, and he wore 23 at Arkansas State. That number went from him to J.D. McKissick. 23 was on a pretty good run there for a while.
That was a good number. If we could sell the jerseys back then like we do now, they could rack up a lot of NIL dollars just between the 23 jerseys.
But man, his management or the people, his business partners might not want to know how easy he was to deal with in that process. Because he's like, whatever you guys want to do, just like all he asked for is kind of like to see it before it went into production. Uh-huh. That was kind of the only ask.
He loves his alma mater. That's extremely evident. Great to visit with him, and good luck to DeMario and the Saints, Blake Groupie, the whole crew as they get ready for the season and training camp coming up, almost here.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about it last week. We tell you now, go to astateredwolves.com/50years, the number 50, astateredwolves.com/50years to get a season ticket to both women's basketball and volleyball. For $99.
Great deal there. Hey, thanks to DeMario Davis for joining us. We always appreciate you tuning in, and we hope you join us again next week for our next edition of the Second to None podcast presented by the Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank.